God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. He spoke. He said, let there be light. And because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I'm Todd Herman. There's a post on Facebook. It's on Twitter. It's on all the social channels I can find. It's put up by a gentleman named Rodney Howard Brown. He's an author, businessman, entrepreneur, historian, collector, international missionary from Africa to the USA, 92 nations in the 44th year. And he posted this anniversary and a warning. Oh, he didn't issue the warning. The anniversary itself does. He writes, today, 4 years ago, I was arrested at my house for the First Amendment of the Constitution. The first pastor in 150 years to be arrested for refusing to shut the church down because of the COVID flu, he wrote C-19. I gladly did it then and would do it again. No compromise, never bow down to the World Economic Forum, UN, or the World Health Organization. And there it is, a picture of him being arrested, Orlando County. It's the replies. It happens not just to him, it happens not just to the United States, it happened in Canada. Pastors arrested for speaking the word of God because there was a bad flu. Well, not particularly bad for most people. In fact, 99.87% survival rate. In fact, it may have just been influenza. Remarketed in order to sell a poisonous, to all too many poisonous, gene sequencing device. The replies go like this. Kevin Fifield wrote, that's because you don't follow the law of Jesus. You follow the gospel of Rodney Howard Brown, which is not the same thing. You put people in jeopardy for your own ego. When the apostles were told by Roman authorities, stop speaking the words of Jesus, stop talking about Jesus, these men who said, hey, follow the authorities, who were responsible for the writings of things like Romans 13, said, no. With all due respect, Emperor, we can't, and we won't. When people say things like this, it's not hard to figure out that they don't actually care about the faith, of course. They don't actually care about it at all. What they care about is rage. What they care about is control. And this is what they were offered under COVID. They were offered the opportunity to take their rage and their need to control and channel it into one direction. The direction towards us. See, human desire is to control other humans, right? This is part of the flesh instinct. I mean, if you think about all of the sin problems, so many of them come down to controlling others. I want what he has. He won't give it to me, so I'll take it. There, now I control it. The act of sexual seduction. I have to have this. I have to have this person. Therefore, I'll do all I can psychologically to make this person want me. It's controlling others. People who gravitate towards government these days are well aware of the fact that they can gain license to control others. What they fail to see is the same thing that the Pharisees failed to see. The same Pharisees who said of Jesus, better that one man die than that the nation fall, the nation of Israel. Better that one man die. Caiaphas, better that one man die. Well, Caiaphas didn't understand that he was acting within God's will. He was, in fact, perpetuating God's grand plan. I don't think the people who are responding to Rodney Howard Brown's posts know they're perpetuating God's plan. The division. Jesus didn't come with the intent to divide. He knew that his words would divide as people choose one side or the other, either passively or actively. Another example, this straight down from Canada. A father in Canada has learned that he is not going to be able to prevent his daughter from being murdered. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't use the right language. Euthanized. This comes from spikedonline.com. Very good resource, by the way, from Britain, but very good resource. They write, imagine one day you discover that your adult daughter, who still lives with you, wants to be euthanized. As far as you're aware, she's healthy. She suffers from autism and ADHD, but no physical illnesses or disabilities, which you know. You know that she's faced many difficulties in her life, but you love her and desperately want to prevent her death. You are left fighting against her doctors, who encourage her decision and are perfectly happy to help her go through with it. To make this nightmare even worse, no one will even tell you why your daughter has been approved to die. This is the awful reality facing one father in Canada, in Alberta. A judge issued a ruling this week that clears the way for a 27-year-old woman known to the court only as MV to be accepted into Canada's Medical Assistance in Dying program, MAID, M-A-I-D. You know, like someone who comes to clean your house, a merry maid. Despite the attempts by her father, known as WV, to prevent this, there was really very little that could be done. Under Canadian law, the court has no choice but to allow his daughter to be killed. According to the twisted logic of assisted dying campaigners, this is the compassionate option. Now, certainly, life could never get better. It could never turn around. It could never be that a group of actual caregivers gather around this young woman and speak into her life and help her find ways to mitigate autism. I have a company I work with on my podcast called Allen Soaps. Started by John, he used to work in the very, very brutal business of politics. He was a digital entrepreneur, very, very smart man, made a lot of money in digital marketing. And then his son, Alan, was born. Alan is nonverbal. He is 13. He's going on his 18th operation. He has a very, very unique syndrome in terms of how his body's constructed. So he moves very differently, hence these 18 operations. He's not a perfect kid, but he works every single day at his soap company where he invents fragrances of soaps and he does packaging and quality control. And you ask him, he's nonverbal, but he can get his iPad out, his little fancy iPad he has, and tell you his job. He's the chief soap officer. And the dignity you see in his work belies this entire lie that this 27-year-old woman should be murdered. Now, in fact, she could probably go kill herself, but that's not what Canada wants. They want to control. They want life and death. They want godlike status. God himself will not be mocked. You can try. You might not even know you're trying to mock God. He will not be mocked. People will learn this eventually. It's now suddenly a controversial thing to say every knee shall bow and every tongue confess. It's controversial all of a sudden in conservative circles because people are saying Jesus is king. Jesus is king. A compassionate king who will come back as a righteous judge. Righteous because his compassion requires it. How could that work? He has to be a righteous judge who goes straight down the line because heaven cannot bear any resemblance to this fallen earth. It would be the opposite of compassion for God to trap us in eternity with people who have refused to take the knee to him because they refused to be sanctified, to become more holy and eventually holy. That would be cruel. It's cruel to put yourself on the other side of God for eternity. And for the nation of Canada, it's beyond cruel. It's unthinkable. Canada is fallen to a degree that the United States may not get, God willing, may not get. I have a friend of mine who does prayer for the United States 4 hours a day. She picks office holders, she picks issues, she picks city council candidates, she picks senators who are fighting righteous fights. She goes into a prayer closet and she prays for them, that God would protect them and help them in their missions. And she fully believes that the United States will see a resurgence of faith and that God will once again turn his face towards us. But what about Canada? I'll have to ask her about Canada. The absolute state of Canada. That's what this post says, describing something that went on in Canada as uncovered by the BBC. Believe it or not, the BBC has done some journalism in relation to the sexual and chemical mutilation of children. This has been a long time coming.
They sent a 14-year-old actress undercover into a pediatric gender clinic somewhere in Quebec. She told this story, it's filmed, and she tells this story to the doctor. She has an eating disorder, and she went on YouTube or whatever, and she came across a trans influencer who also had an eating disorder, but realized that they were trans, and that's why they had the eating disorder. So then they transitioned. She's telling this story to the gender clinician. Within 5 minutes, the clinician has asked her if she wants a mastectomy. Within 7 minutes, I think there's talk of a hysterectomy because internal organs can trigger dysphoria. And within 9 minutes, she's got a prescription for testosterone. No parents there. This is a 14-year-old girl telling the story that she basically self-diagnosed as trans because she saw someone online.
But there is no other way to be so-called trans, but to self-diagnose, because it does not exist. People can have the painful condition of gender dysphoria. Imagine not knowing what you are. Imagine thinking you might be a cow. What happened to Nebuchadnezzar? He spent a period of time as a cow. You think people told him, King, you're not a cow. There is no difference. It's a degree of difference, not a category of difference. Internal organs can cause dysphoria. Your kidneys can make you angry. Your intestines can cause you anxiety. Your pancreas makes you happy. Speaking gibberish like this is the tool of people who do not understand what they're doing. They just know they're to do it, to control others. The clinician who met with this 14-year-old actress is a so-called healthcare provider who's utterly, utterly lost and controlling others. Think of the power. There's a through line here, isn't there? Let's go back through the stories real quick. A 14-year-old actress walks into a so-called gender clinic in Quebec and within 9 minutes is offered a hysterectomy, a mastectomy, and given a piece of paper, prescription to go get testosterone. No parental interference, right? She, if she went through with that, would never give birth. Not ever. In Canada, a father is not able to stop the state from murdering his 27-year-old autistic daughter. Now, she wants to die. She could probably do that through suicide, but why do that when someone will make it easy? The state, she, will never give birth. She will never be fruitful and multiply. Maybe she shouldn't. Maybe she's not gifted to be a parent. She may never come to the Lord Jesus if she hasn't now. And then Rodney Howard Brown, 4 years ago, arrested because he would not stop holding church services as a pastor. In other words, he would not stop speaking life into people. Life. The ultimate control in the minds of people who want to install tyranny is, we're going to control your life and death. God will not be mocked. Fear not those who can harm only the body. Fear the one who can harm both body and soul. God will not be mocked. The people who think they're gaining control are being allowed only that which the Lord lets them have. And eventually, every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess, because Jesus is King. We come back, a warning of sorts from a friend of mine, former Special Forces operator, about America's cities. An opportunity to sit down with a friend. Michael Rourke is retired Special Forces. He's now changed his focus from international security, helping very, very wealthy people secure their homes and businesses, to helping us actually stay safe in cities that he says are further and further being run by cartels. This is a portion of the interview. You can hear the whole thing by going to the ToddHermanShow.com.
When we're used to being, Michael Rourke, a country that can look at other countries like what was happening in Syria. We can see things in the Middle East. We can see what became of areas outside of Paris when they became no-go zones and open borders, flood the country with people who don't respect your laws, have no reason to respect law. They've been allowed to run wild. We're used to seeing that and going, wow, that looks bad. Now we see our cities becoming war zones, like with cartels. And you've looked at what the cartels are doing in our cities. And what do you see?
They basically have freedom of maneuver, as you know, has to use a military expression.
What does that mean?
That means they're essentially free to conduct their activities with very little risk to their activities. The back in the early 90s, a lot of people don't know this, but Special Forces actually used to do some recon missions along in the U.S. along the Mexican border. We'd always have a Border Patrol agent with us who could effect arrest if something was discovered. And we saw just a fraction of what's going on now.
Yeah.
The amount of people coming across the border, the places they're coming from, the fact that you have global, what I call rat lines established to move people into the border, and those rat lines continue into the United States. And it's human trafficking is out of control. Human trafficking is probably at an unprecedented level, not seen since the slave trade of the 1700s and 1800s.
I've read statistics that showed out that more people are enslaved than they were then, which is insane, given the fact that the two biggest nations that were doing it at the time, large, us and England, have stopped kind of that. But to see it in this resurgence, that's insane. But it also makes sense if you think about the superhighway that China's established to help aid with mass migration. The Epic Times is all over this. That this is immigration as warfare. Islamists have practiced this. China recognizes that, and they're using this as a form of warfare in our country to destabilize. And we're seeing this in the cities. This is actual real. It's a Maoist technique, basically, right?
It is. It's a classic insurgent technique. But the fact
is this classic to use migration this way?
I think it's been done in the past in other countries.
All right.
Yeah. But definitely not unprecedented here.
Yeah.
And you have the federal government aiding and abetting this because they see a political benefit from it. But I don't think they're looking at the second and third order effects of what it means to the country as a whole.
So the cartels, these are military organizations.
You could call them paramilitary, organized along military lines.
Well, so that's insulting. Yeah. I don't mean to insult the military, but paramilitary. But they're organized in military. They're armed like military.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the most violent cartels, Los Zetas, is actually comprised of former Mexican Special Forces. They got their name when they were in the Mexican Army. All their radio call signs began with the letter Z. So as we in English, we say Z. In Spanish, you call that letter Zeta. So that's where they took their name from, Los Zetas.
When that's a reality that people are facing and living through, we as citizens are going to be affected by seeing what crime in our cities, break-ins, addictions, fentanyl all over the place, deaths, our kids at risk in ways they've never been at risk because cartels are not just happy to have a base of customers. They want to expand that. We're going to see more kids drawn into that. We're going to see more sex trafficking because sex trafficking begets sex trafficking. When you look at this through an operator's lens, no offense to local cops. There's great local cops. You've, I'm sure, helped train cops. Do they know that they're going to be up against Mexican Special Forces if they actually have to go get into like a hot conflict with these guys?
Well, I don't think most of the their former SF guys are coming over here necessarily into the country. They're operating the cartels that that particular cartel inside Mexico, and they began as a has muscle for one of the other cartels before they broke off on their own. But yeah, there's definitely, especially along the border, there's some of that going on. Some of them are over here. I learned a lot about human trafficking several years ago, actually, working in Bellevue and was interacting with the Bellevue Police Department.
Bellevue, Washington.
Yeah, Bellevue, Washington. They were telling me about the human trafficking that was going on. And on that trip, I was staying in a corporate apartment because this was a multi-week job we were doing. And on an upper floor of that same building, a fire broke out. We were all evacuated. And in the aftermath, it turned out that fire was set to cover the murder of a Thai prostitute who had been trafficked into Bellevue and was for whatever reason, was killed. And they used the fire to try to destroy evidence. So this has been going on for a while, but it's really, the human trafficking has really taken off since probably 2019, 2020.
So if you look at the structure, you said first order, second order, third order effects. Where are we in order of effects right now?
We're seeing all of it. If the first order effect that, let's say, politicians want is to bring a number of people here just so they can stuff congressional districts and then at the next census have more districts.
Yep.
Which are, you know, favoring one particular party. But we're already seeing violence caused by undocumented immigrants, gang members coming in. You know, we had massive prison breaks just take place within the last couple of weeks in Haiti. Over 4,000 prisoners were released, and there's already an established rat line that goes from Haiti to Central America up through Mexico. And then plus, I guess it was revealed that the government's flying directly from Haiti immigrants to the U.S.
Yeah.
And there is absolutely no way to vet those people. There's no vetting taking place.
So we see these cities become these, there are areas of the cities that are no-go zones. And if you disagree with that, I invite you to go talk to someone who lives in Washington, D.C. There were no-go zones when I lived there, right? There are no-go zones in Chicago. And these things expand. There's been very few cities in which I've ever been afraid. Detroit was one of them. And we were back, we got our plane got rerouted into St. Louis. We had to drive into Detroit. We got lost. This is before we had GPS nav. And the guy at the hotel phone said, look, turn around, get on the freeway and turn around. Like, where? I don't care. Get on the freeway. So we're driving through Detroit, Mike, and there were buildings that still had fires in them. There were cars that were still overturned and smoldering. And we looked over to our right and there were people, four or five people, identified our car, were trailing us behind bushes, behind a fence. And I told the guys riding with, I'm blowing this light. Like, I'm out. And we ran this red light and turned right and went onto the freeway. And those guys came out of that little park. They intended to carjack us. There's no doubt. Why would you be trailing a car?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one instance many, many years ago. But guys, we're seeing now gang attacks, beatings. A lot of these racial beatings in schools have gang influence all over them. We've had gang murders. This rapist who raped that jogger this young lady's a nurse. She's out jogging. It turns out his brother had ties to gangs. These are brutal people. So I want to explore how in a setting you can apply situational awareness like you've been taught as a special forces operative and a security professional. Also, how we can secure homes in urban areas. If you live in an urban area, you are not immune to needing to prep. And look, it seems like we people who live in the high mountains of free America, we're the only ones who do this. We might be the only ones with enough room in our house to have a couple years of food, but you can have a year or 6 months on hand. And you can have water filtering, if not water storage. Because when stuff really falls apart, look at Haiti. Hey, don't drink the water. Look at parts of Mexico to this day. Don't drink the water. So you can go to 4patriots.com/Todd, get free shipping and orders over $97. When you do that, go through the hierarchy of needs. Water solutions, filtering. Control your body temp. Get the Patriot Power Generator 2000X, which is a solar generator. You can live in an urban area. The sun still comes there. God, make sure the sun goes everywhere. You can store the power and run medical devices, refrigerators, freezers, communication devices in your home. And if you have to bug out, fold the thing up. You're out in 5 minutes. Make sure, of course, you look at foods so that you can be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
for patriots.com/Todd. Free shipping and orders over $97. And if you're in an urban area, there's some other things you could look at, some alarm devices, etc. there for patriots.com/Todd. So if I walk through the city, I don't see things like you do, but I don't necessarily see things like a bunny rabbit either. Because I lived for a long time in the ghetto and I'm alive, I had to develop a sense of things, like the sense of watching the way someone walks, or are they watching you, right? Is that car always there? Why is that car there? Why is this guy continuing to follow me when I've made three left-hand turns, right? Things like that. Those are very simple, elementary things. I took my daughter on a tour when she's preparing to leave the house, and I tape her on my little version of OPSEC tours, which are nothing compared to yours. So when we see our cities getting these zones where you shouldn't go, sometimes you end up there. So let's talk about some situational awareness basics and then a class you're teaching, which is one of the reasons you're on video, since you're going to show your face in all these classes. So let's start with the very, very basics of being situationally aware. Let's pick a city. You go do business in Chicago. You get dropped off in an area you don't recognize. It's not on the river, and it looks sketchy.
Well, the first thing, if someone's going to practice situational awareness, they first have to win a war. And that war is against yourself and what modern society has done to us. Because we have this ice age part of our brain that's been there for millennia, designed to keep us safe. But modern society has forced us to suppress that, because we don't want to, when something feels wrong, it usually is wrong, but we don't want to be judged. Oh, that guy, I thought that guy was sketchy, but I didn't want someone to judge me because of his socioeconomic status, his ethnicity. So I ignored it. And that's what a lot of the survivors of violent encounters report, is that they didn't want to be seen as judging. So they ignored the signs, they suppressed it. So you have to win that war with yourself before you can start thinking about scenarios. And it's a mental game. There's a three-part process to become situationally aware. Each one's interdependent on the other. You have to decide you're going to switch on. It's like a circuit breaker. You got to flip it on. Okay, I'm going to start paying attention. And until it becomes a habit, that breaker's going to flip back off, like sometimes on a bad breaker panel. You got to keep flipping it back on until it'll finally stay on its own. Next thing, you have to...
Let's go to the breaker. You're switching on the breaker, which is... Is the breaker everyone's a threat until known otherwise? Or is the breaker, I am not going to give in to, I'm not going to shy away from that person or think that person's dangerous because they're black, for instance, or because they're Hispanic, or I can tell you this, there's parts of North Idaho. I can take you to parts of North Idaho where white people on white people, you'd be stupid to not feel uncomfortable, because there are parts of Idaho where strangers ain't welcome, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the breaker you're turning on?
No, the breaker is just the decision that, okay, I'm going to start learning and practicing situational awareness. And until it becomes an unconscious act, it's a very conscious act that you have to say, okay, time to focus. Eventually, you'll get to where you're focusing all the time.
Yeah.
The second part is vanquishing denial.
Yeah.
That's where you have to realize that bad things do happen to good people. There is evil in the world. And that popping sound at the mall food court is not fireworks.
Even if it's fireworks, it's not fireworks.
Correct. Until proven otherwise.
Right. You hear a sound, so the steps are, you hear a sound, you got to make an identification of what it is, you have to analyze what it is, and then make a decision to act.
Yeah, that's something, like we go into our course called the OODA loop.
Say it slower.
The OODA loop.
Yeah.
Observe, orient, decide, act. Okay. Invented by a Vietnam era fighter pilot. So you vanquish denial, because there is video of where shootings start going down and you have people just kind of standing around. What's that noise? And what do they say on the news afterwards? I thought it was fireworks. But if you watch, and the video, there are videos out there, if you watch young people or just people in inner city Chicago on the street, as soon as the first round goes off, they react like combat veterans. They're getting off the X. That they are getting away from the gunfire, they're getting low, and they're moving out. They have completely vanquished denial.
So situational awareness is, you make this decision to turn the switch on. I'm going to practice situational awareness. I'm going to become better at it. When I hear something like that, until I confirm otherwise, I treat it as the thing. Right. Yeah, definitely treated as a threat. Just have to understand that even in situations, if bad things can happen, the third part of situational awareness is what I call trusting your gut. Some people call it instinct. Some call it women's intuition. But it's that ice age part of your brain that's telling you something's wrong and I'm here to warn you about it. This is where the big part of the internal war takes place, where your modern sensibilities are trying to suppress that instinct.
Yeah. And so for me, in my realm of thinking, I think we can sense evil because I think we're eternal beings that can sense the presence of evil. I don't disagree that we have, God has given us this gift of fear, Gavin De Becker's book.
Yep.
But, so let's get to a specific case here in a second, because I think it sounds like concept until you apply it to something very specific. So let's use the OODA loop in just a second here. If you're watching this and you have questions about this, we're going to supply you a way that you can go to Mike's course and actually save money on this. It's not something you should go to alone. It's something you should take your kids and your family. And by the way, if you conceal carry and all that, that's great. I hope you're trained on how to use that. I know Mike is. So we're going to talk about that.
Again, that was me talking with my friend Mike O'Rourke, retired Special Forces operative, now changing focus from being an international security consultant to big businesses to helping individuals like us stay safe in cities that the parties decided to be, well, run by cartels. We'll come back with the Tower Babbling. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll get to the Tower of Babbling in a moment. In fact, this could be sort of a precursor to it. In fact, it is a precursor to the Tower of Babbling. Tower of Babbling is when we thank God for letting us see the display of human wisdom from the people he allows to be temporarily in charge of things. We can compare that to God's wisdom. So this is a precursor because it's not an audio. Thanks to Wesley Yang for pointing this out. Wesley is this great social media academic, an academic on social media who actually makes sense of things. And his precursor to the comment you're about to hear is this. It's difficult to reconstruct the series of cascading derangements that make this a thinkable sentence to compose and post. Better not to try. The institutions that serve as echo chambers for it must be dismantled. Absolutely true. So what's the post? It came from National Now. National Now. What? National Organization for Women? Repeat after us. Weaponizing womanhood against other women is white supremacist patriarchy at work. Making people believe there isn't enough space for trans women in sports is white supremacist patriarchy at work. Could that be deconstructed at all? Therefore, all women are black. If they're no, it can't be done. And of course, no one's making the argument that there's no room for men in sports. Men have always been allowed to do sports. Men are still allowed to do sports. They simply don't get to masquerade as women. How that becomes white supremacist? Well, it works like this. The phrase white supremacist means nothing. Like the phrase woman is coming to mean nothing. Like the phrase racism has come to mean nothing. Because to the people who merchandise this for controlling others, the meaning doesn't matter. The intent matters. This is very much like stabbing a person with a knife and saying, what did the knife say to you? It didn't say anything. It stabbed me. What was the meaning of that? The meaning is aggression. The meaning is intent to harm. The meaning is the intent to tear apart. Thank you, Wesley Yang, for saying it better than I did. Now, we'll get into the Tower of Babbling. This is something we do that might be weird. We thank God for placing people like the group, the head of the group that we just quoted, on these tall towers, because the towers are actually made of shaking sand. They're not real towers. God's allowing this for now for his purposes. That's why we created the feature we call the Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Culture is, it is a reflection of our moment and our time. And present culture is the way we express how we're feeling about the moment.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites that I think help underline my assertion that God is putting these people up there on these towers, leaning back and forth, columns about to fall over. So we can observe that and say, you know what? I think God's right. I think the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. This is apparently the DNC chair, Shamie Harrison, who talks about the first thing he thinks when he sees on stage Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, and figurehead Biden at an event where they raised $20 million from Hollywood.
Seeing those three presidents on the stage, these are the things that popped in my head. Honesty, decency, integrity. Those are three servant leaders. And that's something that Donald Trump doesn't know anything about.
Pardon my lack of professionalism at yakking it up behind the scenes. All right. So decency, Biden. In a hawk to China, Ukraine, and God knows what other countries, gropes young women, gropes girls squeezing their breast buds in public as everyone watches. And later the girl said, yeah, he did that to me. I was afraid to tell. Whose daughter Ashley says she took showers late at night to prevent her dad from jumping into the shower with her. Note to self, little kids don't take showers, particularly not late at night. And Clinton, probably a rapist, probably an Epstein Island rapist, definitely a big fan of Jeff Epstein. Barack Hussein Obama, if you like your plan, you can keep it. Honesty, integrity. Blocked the DOJ from actually going and arresting the drug traffickers who were bringing heroin across, over, through, and over our former southern border. They were indicted, ready to be arrested. Barack Hussein Obama said, no, let them go. Integrity. The blind leading the blind. They're bound to stumble. They're stumbling now. Now you see why we do the Tower of Babbling? Those people are still on their tall towers of shaking sand. People still think they have human wisdom. Next up in the Tower of Babbling, an AP reporter talking with the spokesliar for the White House decided to create kind of an interesting link. The AP bird's name is Will Weissert.
So the criticism over the Transgender Day of Visibility, the White House said that the president wouldn't abuse his faith for political purposes. Does the president think that's what Republicans are doing?
I mean, look, just a couple of things, and really so surprised by the misinformation that's been out there around this, and I want to be very clear. Every year, for the past several years, on March 31st, Transgender Day of Visibility is marked. And as we know, for folks who understand the calendar and how it works, Easter falls on different Sundays.
It was chosen to be at the end of March to collide with Easter because it's a satanic inverse baptism of people born again, not of the spirit and water, but of big pharma and the sexual left. People who die to their old selves. This is literally what kids are told very often. Kids, boys who want to decide to pretend to be girls or they've been conned into believing they are, very painful condition, are often told, have a funeral for your old self. You've been born again. Die to your old self. Take the boys' underwear and some of the boys' toys and take them in the backyard and bury them. If you can, burn them first. After all, you have been created anew. Born again. It doesn't belong in American culture. It doesn't belong anywhere because it's satanic, and yet it's going to be here. So what do? Well, we stand firm on the Word of God. We love these people. We hate what's being done to them and by them. Last clip in today's Tower Babbling. So this is an MSNBC analyst. Same network, by the way, that said President Trump was committing acts of terrorism by having a picture he posted of figurehead Biden tied up in the back of a pickup truck as if he'd been taken captive. It's a distasteful tweet. We can admit that. It is. For a former president to be doing that with a sitting figurehead, it's distasteful to me. And the same network that panicked about that had Tiffany Cross take a sort of different approach to having, well, you'll hear.
It's just so dumb for this defendant to antagonize judges. He got a $464 million judgment against him the last time he tried it. And now he's antagonizing a judge who could, you know, have his liberty at stake. I mean, next Easter, he could be looking at reading his, having nothing to do but read his God Bless the USA Bible in a prison cell if he keeps this up.
Oh, that's so funny. And it's clever, too. It's very clever. Oh, pardon me. I fell asleep listening to her. Edgy. Edgy. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time. And I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
It's kind of been sad lately. We've had, I'm gifted to serve in a youth ministry. And have been gifted to work with an extraordinary group of young men who are becoming men. Many of them, I think, now are men. And their numbers are dwindling. I don't think it's anything we've done. These are young men who've attended this youth camp, most of them since sixth grade. They're now seniors. And they're working. Some of them two jobs while going to school and playing sports. That's the life for most of them. Two jobs, school, and sports. Sad, though, to not see them on a regular basis. My job is to pour into them, to speak into their lives, to walk with them, to be available for them. It actually happens that so often they pour into me. Very so often. When I was talking with some of them about the stresses related to being a senior, a lot of them talk about, well, going into the world. They're vitally aware of the fact that the world has fallen. They're vitally aware of the fact that their female classmates are ill-treated by a world that hates femininity and yet makes a cult of it. Hates it and makes it a small g god. Hates it and makes cartoons of it. Many of them bemoan the fact that the young women with whom they've gone to school have been presented with a choice. You can dress like a woman who has sex on film for money. You can be a jock girl. Or you can be LGBTQ, so-called T. What you can't be is a straight white girl, because that's wrong. You certainly can't be a girl whose intent is to grow up and be a mother. Can't do that, because that's giving into gender classifications. Say the same people who pretend that they can classify men as this opposite gender. The boys we work with see this. It saddens them. They're also, though, committed to changing it. They're committed to being Christian men who help steward the lives of Christian women by coming under and lifting up. And they want a wife that will do the same for them, to come under them and to lift up, to submit together to the Lord Jesus. They do recognize their job as spiritual leader of the home. That worries them as well. There's another syndrome, though, that happens to seniors. It's the hopelessness of, why do I have to go through these last classes? Many of the boys in our group, and they're a self-selecting group. It's not every single young man who goes consistently to youth camp from sixth grade to senior year and only now appealing off. It's not very common. They're a self-selecting group of kids who take life pretty seriously. They have fun. Don't think they don't. They absolutely do. But they all get very good grades. Most of them have decided to go to college. Some have decided to go become entrepreneurs and to skip college. God bless them. They're going through that process of, why do I have to check these boxes? Why do I have to take more hard math classes? I already have an A. I already have an A+. I could skip the rest of school probably and still come out of this with an A. I could take an occasional test. Why am I working so hard? The other night, chatting with some of these young men, one of them said something. He said, I'd rather view high school as a mission field. I've got 1,600 kids around me. 1,600 young people, most of them who don't know Jesus. I'd rather see it as a mission field. So we talked about the combination of these things. Here you are, a high achiever. You don't need these classes for knowledge. You know this stuff. It's just work for you. What about this? What about going to the young people you serve? He's 18, serves young people. Sixth graders, seventh graders, eighth graders. What about going to those boys and saying to them, man, I'm so burned out in school. You know what? I could slough. I could skip. I could just mail it in. I could get C's and still come out with an A+ average. I'm not going to do it. Because when we work, we're to work as if we're working for the Lord Jesus himself. That's a great idea. To show that you live the faith. Not just talking about it. Kids are much more influenced by what we do than what we say. When you have an opportunity to live your faith by doing the hard thing because it's God's way, I mean, an opportunity to share with your family, your kids. I had to do this when I quit local radio with my daughter. Yep, I said no to a 5-year contract. Why? They want me to lie. Oh. She understood. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Until the Lord decides you and I can speak again together. On behalf of AFR and Randy, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.